Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is the Redbox Podcast. I'm Matt Cholley. Coming up on today's episode, no PMQs unpacked because the Commons is in recess because there's nothing happening in the world the House of Commons would want to debate. So instead, we've got Starmer unpacked. Patrick McGuire joins me to unpick the Labour leader's conference speech and reflect on whether or not he's yet sealed the deal with the electorate. That's coming up in just a moment. Before that, as ever, on a Wednesday, it's time for these two.
The Colonists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on Times Radio.
Yes, it's that time on a Wednesday. We always speak to two of our favourite columnists, and here they are both in the studio. Morning, Robert Crampton.
Morning, Matt Cholley.
And Alice Thompson. Good morning.
Morning.
Nice to have you both here. It's all going very well, isn't it? This new era. You enjoying the new era?
Fabulous. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Economic meltdown.
Yeah.
What's the pound worth this morning?
It's gone down again, I think.
Right. Is it down to a parity yet?
Hang on. Let me have a look. I was reading PA and they were saying it was down.
Right. It makes it all much simpler because you just can't do anything, can you? You can't book a holiday. You
no.
can't turn the heating on. You don't have any kind of choices left anymore. You just have to keep going, don't you?
You have little faith. Somebody's recently booked to go to New York at Christmas.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. Good call. Really looking forward to that. Yeah. I think we might just stay in the hotel today.
Yeah.
Yes. We just haven't got any future plans. I mean, we've just stopped in our family. Everyone is like so worried, so nervous about, you know, rent, heating.
Interest rates.
Food.
Yeah, it's down to $1.06.
Yeah, well, even my daughter was haggling today about her university, how much she was going to get, because she said the food's gone up so much there. And you realise that. I mean, you know, every age group now is finding it harder, aren't they? They've all learned about inflation.
Yeah.
I want to see a stat which, at what point the interest rate rises for the average household wipes out the tax cut. I mean, not that anybody got the tax cut unless you...
But pretty quickly, and the stamp duty, quickly. I mean, that's not going to help anyone now, is it? We're going to have property prices plunging.
Yeah.
We don't want to sound too depressed today.
Well, no, we don't want to stop talking Britain down. Have you read Daniel Hannan's today?
So I was about to say, that's my favourite point, that Daniel Hannan has now come out yet again and said it's not actually the Conservative Party's fault. The only reason that the markets are
plunging...
Hang on,
if Robert hasn't read it, guess whose fault he thinks it is.
Remainers?
No.
It's even better.
Oh, goodness, I don't know. Go on, tell me.
This is what the headline
Buzz Light,
of the piece.
Yeah.
No, the pound isn't crashing over a trifling batch of tax cuts. It's because the markets are terrified of Starmer.
Oh, of a Labour government, right.
It's Keir Starmer's fault.
Oh, I see. So the markets are reacting to a possible Labour government in 2 years' time.
But the implication is that this package is really deeply unpopular, which therefore means that Keir Starmer becoming Prime Minister is a more realistic possibility. And it's that which has upset the markets.
So that's my problem with the Brexiteers, is that, I know we're not really supposed to mention it, but there is that sense that it's always someone else's fault. So it was either the European Union's fault, and now it can't be the European Union's fault. It has to be someone else's fault. And then after that, it's either going to be the hedge fund guys, because they should never have started, you know, betting on the pound, or it's going to be the Bank of England, and now it's going to be Keir Starmer. They never actually look at it and think, maybe it's up to us. This is our responsibility. We are now in government, and we are calling the shots, and maybe, you know, we should be doing something about it.
And it seems like, because I'm quite surprised that some of the other sort of your Gerard Lyonses, who, you know, supporters of, you know, Liz Truss and her favourite economists, even he's been a bit, I'm not sure about getting rid of the top rate of tax, and maybe the timing, you know, some other economists are saying the timing is...
Well, the top rate of tax thing is a disaster. I mean, I can't see it makes much of a difference economically.
Oh, Daniel Hannan argues in this Con Home piece that it will bring in more money because rich people won't have the incentive to try and get around it.
But well, they already have got round it, so they're not going to change all their tax returns for that.
And you're changing it from 45p to 40p for 629,000 people who earn over 150,000. It doesn't seem to add up to a lot of money to me, whereas the politics of it are absolutely disastrous. I mean, it's just... that's the end of the... That's the goodbye to the red wall, I would say. Because even... I mean, what are you going to say if you're a Labour canvasser? You
just, on top of
bankers' bonuses.
Bankers' bonuses. That may be... make slightly more sense because they were just getting more in salary anyway. But the optics of it, the politics of it, are a disaster.
Also, the super rich aren't going to do that much better out of it because actually, if they want to then go on their holidays to Mauritius and
all that costs are going to be sucked up in your mortgage on your £2 million house is going to go. You know, all of that
clothes from America
starts.
I don't think people are entrepreneurs are so venal that they sit on their bottoms.
And actually, all the stories that came out over the weekend were people who do work in the city, the people who are going to benefit from unlimited bonuses and not paying the top weight of tax. So I don't need this. The country's in trouble.
They also don't want class warfare. I mean, that's the other thing. You don't want this sense that everyone's going to hate you.
Fundamental misjudgment about the mood of the country. And I think for the first time in a long time, that Labour's with its sort of nationalised but not quite nationalised green proposal is more in tune with the mood of the country. I mean, they had a poll a few weeks ago in the Sunday Times saying that a majority of Tory voters thought that energy should be taken back into public ownership. Yeah. Tory voters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whether that's a good idea or not, I don't know. I don't think it is, probably. But that's the mood.
It's a weird thing, though, isn't it? At the precise moment that we've got the free marketeers in trouble, I think it was George Osborne tweeted this yesterday, saying that we've got the free marketeers telling us to ignore the markets.
Yeah.
It is exactly, again, it's them blaming the markets, aren't they, when actually... they can't really blame anyone else because the markets are reacting to them.
It's like a bunch of 19-year-olds who've just read Hayek or Friedman and are all enthused about it and have read maybe a few libertarian pamphlets have taken over the country, you know?
George Osborne tweeted, odd to see free marketeers urging a free market government to ignore the markets. Mm. But it's a sort of a weird thing that for this to be the moment that the free marketeers take over at a time when the energy market isn't working. You know, the housing market isn't working.
Yes, which is why there's an increased appetite for state intervention, which we saw we saw with COVID. I mean, there was an intervention and people thought, nobody will respond to it. But people actually liked a bit of intervention, a bit of guidance from the government. And they weren't all libertarian and... the libertarianism turns out to be a really small, minority taste, doesn't it?
And actually, we saw quite the opposite. The polls showed sizable chunks of the public wanted, it was about 20% wanted to shut nightclubs permanently.
Yeah.
Just like now
they want guidance with energy saving measures and so on. And the government's too frightened to, either frightened or too ideologically opposed to give people guidance about heating their homes. I mean, it's bizarre that is what kind of personal liberty means to you. Why are you even in politics if you don't believe in sort of telling anybody or advising people what to do?
And the weird thing, going back to the Dan Hannan piece, he argues that basically this is good economics, but acknowledges it might be bad politics. It would definitely be bad politics, he says, to reverse on this. But you think, well, the economics doesn't seem that smart. I mean, there was clearly a school of thought which says if growth is low, you cut taxes and people spend money in that fuel. But you don't do that when inflation is already high, because all you end up doing is fueling inflation and then interest rates have to go up and you...
Hannan's pretending that they're doing the sensible grown-up thing and that they are going to look to the future and all the measures that Liz Truss is doing now is going to help Britain in the future. Yeah. Whereas actually, it feels like there are a bunch of children, as Robert says, who are in there messing around. And it is very ideological and it's a huge gamble. And I think people don't want to take any more gambles. They've already taken gambles over the last few years.
And you import inflation and you fuel consumption for the rich. When what you should be doing is making these really boring long-term supply-side changes to get growth in the economy, like, you know, infrastructure and the rest of it.
Yeah, and that's the... It all just seems so...
That becomes harder to do, though, when borrowing goes up. You know? I mean, that's easy. When interest rates are 0.1%, then obviously government should be doing big infrastructure projects.
Yeah.
But when they're paying 4% or more, as it's going to be next year, then that becomes harder as well.
Yeah. And then one of Liz Truss's old ideas was to take all of the spending from COVID, bundle it all up into a long-term sort of war bond. But look, the cost of all that's gone. Even like the 30-year bonds have gone So we're going to have to pay more to service all that as well.
The only time I actually feel sorry for us when you get the American economists all telling us how rubbish Britain is. And then yeah. For a moment, you think,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah, when the New York Times writes a piece about how terrible it is. Hang on a minute.
The New York Times
We're not that bad.
The New York Times does that every week. It's getting really boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least we'll have tourists coming to Britain because, you know, actually it'll be cheaper here. So we may get an influx of people coming in to see how amazing this country is.
We've got to sell a lot of snow globes and porcelain models of Big Ben, though, haven't we, to make up for everything.
It's interesting now that she wants to write to remove the cap on immigration, which is...
That's a proper libertarian view.
Yes.
But not one that you thought she was going to make, or that I think a lot of the Red Wall thought was going to happen.
Kind of what lost the referendum, wasn't it? Was essentially immigration.
Yeah.
And now we've left the European Union.
But then it's a big argument.
And we've got a labour shortage, and so we're going to have to...
But then there becomes an argument. If you let more people in, the economy does grow, but not per head. So each individual person doesn't get better off. Yeah. There's just more people sharing the money.
Yeah.
The size of the pie. One of the things I've noticed, actually, I suppose what changes the whole political argument is that at the Labour Party conference, I think it was Rachel Reeves announced, they were going to take the money that is going to be spent on cutting the top rate of tax, and they would spend it on doctors and nurses.
Mm. Yes.
And think, oh, that's great. But that's just borrowing. That money doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That's
we've all learned to spend now. I think that was the biggest problem about COVID, is actually everyone had a bit more money because they weren't going into work, they weren't commuting, and they couldn't spend it on going to the pub or going out.
Yeah.
So they had a bit of savings then, and the government was just spending vast amounts. Furlough was just like this weird new thing, and Eat Out to help out. We'd never seen anything like it. So I think
there was a magic money tree after all.
They thought, oh my God, we didn't realise you could spend this kind of money.
And it now just means that the Tories can't say to Labour, well, your doctors and nurses aren't funded. No. So what they are, they're funded with your money. Funded tax cut for the rich.
I mean, the Tories have got into borrowing to spend in a big way, haven't they?
Yeah.
Well, I think what they want from Keir Starmer now, the voters, is a bit more kind of adult, grown up. You can't have everything you want.
There was
a little bit
of that in his speech, it's got to take time, or we can't do all good, all the good Labour things immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
While also promising
lots more nurses.
Quite a lot
when in doubt, bringing a wheel on a nurse.
A million nurses. Two million nurses.
Yeah.
Like he's organising an auction. That's enough politics. Let's talk about memoirs.
Oh, yeah.
I really like... So, you've written... You don't want... You're glad your children aren't writing memoirs.
Well, I've written that this is Harry's memoir, in which he's going to be nasty about his dad, the new king, which is being rewritten. Maybe to make it nastier or to make it nicer, I don't know. In the light of the accession, but I've had a sneak preview into what my children may write about me, because they that's what they spend their time telling me anyway.
You have been writing about them for quite a long time.
Well,
as I say in that column, they could justifiably argue it's their turn. I've had 20 years of writing about them. They started writing about them when they were 2 and 4, and they're now 23 and 25.
If they or your wife ever had any veto over.
No. Because I always invoke the freedom of the press. And no, they don't.
This is your beta mail column.
This is beta mail,
I mean, which is basically just your life.
I mean, I would hope that I've been sensitive about it and it hasn't scarred them for life.
It's not what they say.
You write about your children as well.
I occasionally do put them in, but then I normally have to tell them I'm going to do it. And occasionally they complain. There have been one or two complaints. I remember was talking about one being... a serial gambler, which he is, aged about 9 or 10, he was.
Yeah.
And he complained vociferously about that. Sometimes I slip them in just to see if they ever read my column, which they don't quite often.
That's a good test.
My son doesn't read it. My daughter does, and she wants to be in it more. My litmus test is I always make sure the joke's on me rather than anybody else. And I think, I mean, that's the title of the column. And I always try and make sure that I'm the person being mocked by myself.
And that's the problem, isn't it, with Prince Harry, is you don't feel this is going to be an entertaining, amusing...
No.
This is what I did with Dad.
Sideways, self-deprecating... Look.
No, it's not...
An amusing thing happened at Alton Towers.
That's not the way they roll in Montecito.
Remember that time Dad dropped all the ice creams? That's not what this is going to be about.
No, it's not. No, it's going to be about the time that...
I just don't know why he's doing it.
money. I mean, he did get paid a fortune to do it. And I think he did try, didn't he, at the beginning?
He's got $17 million as half.
And at the beginning, Prince Harry did, I mean, he did try and make it more about mental health. And I think what's happened is the publishers want it to be.
He's got
much
a three-book
tougher
deal for $34 million, of which they've given him $17 million already.
Yeah, it's quite tricky.
And his initial draft, reading between the lines, was obviously some really dull tome about
live, laugh, play.
Mm. Yeah. And they said, well, no, could you, would you mind slagging off your dad a bit more?
Yeah.
I think. And
that's, or the whole family, if you can.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they.
You should never have taken the book. I mean, that was the problem.
It's a fundamental misunderstanding about what it is to be in the royal family, isn't it? They want to make money out of it.
But from his point of view, if he does genuinely want a rapprochement with his brother and his dad,
doesn't look like he does.
Tear up the book.
I think
the singly easiest way to do it, wouldn't it?
He doesn't want a rapprochement. I mean, I think they've from what I've read, whilst he was over here, there were attempts made.
Well, he may have spent some of the rejected money. I mean, that is the problem, isn't it? It's such a huge amount of money that it's very difficult to know what you would do if you then had to give it all back.
And he doesn't might
have earmarked it for various different projects.
Yeah. I don't think he wants to give it back. I don't think he wants a rapprochement.
Yeah.
I
think he must do. I mean, what's so difficult is so prodigal son, isn't it? Because you have, you know, the new Prince of Wales going around with his wife, and they both look sort of, you know, gorgeous and happy, and they're doing their dutiful work. And he is the prodigal son across the water. And I think that's really hard, but it makes fantastic story for everyone else.
Yeah,
that's the problem. It's a great soap opera, but unless you're inside it.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, with all that money, you can't feel that sorry for him. No. Anyway, it's lovely to see you both.
You too.
Do you get, you could get a £50 million book deal for collected works of Beta Mail?
No, I did do the collected works. Yeah. It sold extremely badly. People said, I've read that and I could read it again for free if I really could be bothered to Google it. And funny enough, I'm not going to pay £9.99 to read something that I can for free.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah, it didn't sell well.
That's the market. There's more market
That's
failure.
The market, yeah, and I accept that.
The failure of the market of collected columns is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you should have given a signed copy to Matt for his birthday.
What, the birthday that he didn't invite me to?
Yes, which he didn't invite us to. Yeah. And I did give you a signed copy of our book that Rachel and I did about our interviews.
I bought a copy of your book.
Oh, you bought one?
I paid for it.
Maybe why you weren't invited.
I didn't, actually. I need to get one.
You have? Well, you two can go and sort that out.
Okay, all right.
Alice has always got about half a dozen in her bag. Yeah, and a card machine. Lovely to see you both. Robert Crampton, Alice Thompson then. Of course, you can read them in the Times every week. You just need to get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/TimesRedBox. Up next, it's Starmer Unpacked.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast. Now it's time for Keir Starmer.
Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire. Yeah!
Yeah, no PMQs this week because the House of Commons isn't sitting. And why would they when there's nothing going on in the world? But Patrick Maguire is, well, he's not here. In fact, he's in Liverpool. How are you this morning, Patrick?
I'm bright and breezy, Matt. I'm sat in the conference centre. That's rapidly emptying around me as people return to their 100% interest rate mortgages. I'm having a great time.
So what we thought we'd do is sort of pick through in some detail Keir Starmer's speech yesterday, looking at the politics of it and the what it might mean for what happens in the coming months. So this is essentially, it's not normally PMQs, we pause it live. We weren't on air yesterday, so we couldn't do that, so we're doing it right now. So let's kick off, Patrick. And in fact, he started, unusually with Keir Starmer, he started with a joke.
After all the changes we've made, all the hard work that we've put in, finally, we're seeing the results. Yes, conference. We can say it at last. Arsenal are top of the league.
Very good. Patrick, we'll overlook the joke of the Arsenal reference. There was quite a lot in this, wasn't there, about him basically boasting. You might think I'm boring, but I've sorted out the Labour Party and I've got rid of that awful Corbyn man.
Yes, exactly. And also, I think the joke is important. If we compare Keir Starmer's sense of confidence and sense of ease in front of a camera to even this time last year, and I think he has grown in confidence. He's what his aides call a confidence player. And having done all the boring stuff, as you say, having made several reforms to Labour's Byzantine internal procedures, having got people he wanted or the people his aides wanted in the right place, he's now much more ease and is honing a much more, well, not a much more informal style. I'd still say, even those around him would admit he's not the most compelling speaker. But he's in a better place as an orator, I think.
And also, I suppose, it was a bit more on brand for him. It's a slight dad joke. And it was about
Arsenal. He's not talking about Love Island and giving people the ick.
Exactly,
John McTurnan, who used to work for Tony Blair and then Julia Gillard, the Australian Prime Minister, wrote a very interesting piece earlier in the week where he said Labour needs to tell the public that Keir Starmer likes beer and football again and again and again and again. So perhaps they're taking some advice.
Yeah, maybe there's a bit of that. And then there was a sort of, he's also very keen to accentuate his patriotism. The conference backdrop was all the Union flag as well. Meant several times talking about the Queen.
Conference. We've seen two sides of Britain in the last few weeks. On one side, a nation united by a profound purpose to pay its respects to a remarkable sovereign. And that queue, 5 miles at its peak, even in death, our Queen found a unique way to capture the British spirit. But conference, the other side of Britain never went away. A Britain all at sea, where a cloud of anxiety hangs over working people.
And what I thought was interesting, Patrick, is that there was a talking about the Queen several times, where, and obviously he did that at the weekend. And I think there's the sort of patriotism thing, and while not trying to talk Britain down, because you don't want to look like you're just saying the country's rubbish, and almost trying to turn what the Conservatives are doing to the country into the unpatriotic path.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute point, and something some Corbynites came to realise by the end of Jeremy Corbyn's tenure. They released a lot of sort of Ken Loach-style films about how bleak post-industrial Northern England was, and saying, we'll fix these deindustrialised towns. Britain has been held back. We've got a compelling economic message to turn that around. The problem was, as Corbyn people put it to me by the end of the tenure, it's like, well, we've actually come to realise that even if you are living in somewhere, North Londoners might think is benighted and a bit of a dump. Lots of people are very proud of where they're from, and they're proud of their country, and they don't like the idea of particularly the left moaning again and again and again about how rubbish it is. And adopting the mantle of patriotism, and it's a similar thing with the financial and fiscal credibility message that we'll come on to in a minute. It's turning the Tories' own framing of the debate against them rather than trying to reshape the debate as the Corbyn project did ultimately unsuccessfully. So that's certainly a gambit we'll see more of. And also on the patriotism thing, I think it's another reminder of unglamorous though he may be, slightly plodding in his delivery, Keir Starmer has, or rather the people around Keir Starmer, have pulled off quite the organisational feat, which is getting Labour Conference and the Labour Party grassroots into a place where you can say all this stuff on stage without being booed or heckled or disrupted by protesters as he was last year.
Yeah, which actually was part of the reason why it went on for so long. Well, let's turn our attention to the thing that everyone, of course, is talking about and thinking about, and that's the economy. And what's happened since the not-so-many budget on Friday. And throughout the speech, there were some quite sharp, smart attacks on the Conservatives' record on the economy. So we put them all together. Here we are.
The government has lost control of the British economy. And for what? They've crashed the pound. And for what? Higher interest rates, higher inflation, higher borrowing. And for what? Not for you, not for working people, for tax cuts for the richest 1% in our society. Don't forget, don't forgive. The only way to stop this is with a Labour government. Conference, that's how the Tories have governed our country for 12 long years. That's why our economy has been more brittle than others in the face of crisis. They used to lecture us about fixing the roof when the sun was shining. But take a look around Britain. They haven't just failed to fix the roof. They've ripped out the foundations, smashed through the windows, and now they've blown the doors off for good measure. In their budget last week, they sent out a new message. A message that echoes around the kitchens and workplaces of families right across the country. And says, your struggles, your hopes, your ambitions don't matter to us. We are not here for you. You are not our people. We are here for those at the top, and the rest of you can shove off.
Now, Patrick, I think that might be the first time I've ever heard the phrase shove off in a party conference. I wonder if it was stronger language in the first draft, and that was the alternative they settled on. But it was interesting that Keir Starmer, I thought he went some of the way to claiming the sort of moral high ground on the economy. If the Conservatives are going to, you know, give up on the idea of balancing the books and fiscal rules and all of that, I still didn't quite feel that he nailed it. Do you think that's fair?
I think so. You know, after his shut up of your face moment, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because Keir Starmer is many things, and he clearly has many talents that those around him find useful, but he is not, he is very much not an economist, and those around him freely admit that. And I think, yes, he certainly has the bones of an argument there on Labour as the party of fiscal credibility and the Tories bankrupting the country, and look at what's happening in the markets today. I think Labour people think they're onto a winner there. And, you know, as we spoke to a shadow cabinet minister on Monday night, didn't we, who said the brilliant thing about all these tax cuts is they give us a load of fiscal headroom when we come in to make big tax and spending plans. But we still, beyond the bones of that argument, don't really know what Keir Starmer's vision or, you know, if the method is growth, what is the, or if the object is growth, what's the method? We still haven't really got that sense. And, you know, if you're putting to Labour people, as we have repeatedly over the past few days, hang on, where's the money coming from for X, Y, and Z? They're still a bit evasive. And I think part of that is, one, Keir Starmer's not really a great economic thinker. And secondly, I think the problem is there is disagreement within his top team on that too.
It's also very reactive. That's one of the other things, is the sort of, so the big announcement in his speech on the NHS... that they're going to, you know, hire lots of more doctors and nurses by using the money that would have been spent on cutting the top weight of tax is instead going to be spent on doctors and nurses. So it's sort of taking the Conservative government's move and then turning it to their, rather than just announcing a thing in and of itself, which is a sort of self-contained big bang idea. And, you know, and all the sort of fixing the roof and the sun is shining, that's all sort of using the language and the stances of the Conservatives and reacting to it rather than it being a sort of standalone thing in isolation. Let's move on, because if there's one thing that Keir Starmer loves to do, and I was interesting what you think about this, Patrick, because picking up your working class credentials, I think probably work better when you're up against the old Etonian of Boris Johnson, and whether or not that works with Liz Truss. But anyway, this is what I had to say.
Now, some of you have heard this before. I grew up in a pebble-dash semi. Dad was a toolmaker. Mum was a nurse. Our first car was a Ford Cortina. It was the 1970s. So I remember what rising prices feel like. I remember when our phone was cut off because we couldn't pay the bill. How hard it was to make ends meet. It wasn't easy.
I mean, we have heard that before, Patrick. It's interesting that you felt the need to restate it again, given quite how much we heard about his dad being a toolmaker in last year's speech.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, at least we didn't get that lengthy monologue about submerging spark plugs in water and all that, you know, and the stuff on robotics, isn't it? But I think it's, you know, there were lots of what you might call Wilsonian moments in that speech, and a lot of the rhetoric on technology, as much as all the comparisons beforehand were to Tony Blair, I think it owed much more to Harold Wilson, Keir Starmer's favourite prime minister, of course, favourite Labour leader.
Yeah.
And I think, as you say, it's a similar sort of message. Okay, he's not running against an older Tony, but there's definitely a sense, as you see from the messaging on the economy, that this is a Tory government that is out there to help their mates in the city.
Yeah.
And if you are called Sir Keir Starmer, you do have to explain to the public that you are, one, a grown-up, hence I was around in the 1970s, and two, you are not one with millionaire bankers. And I think he did that quite effectively there, much more effectively than just repeating the old toolmaker and nurse live in a house in a pebble-dash semi in Reigate, and you know the rest.
Let's move on then to his big announcement on energy. You know, I mean, clearly this feels like a policy born out of the summer rather than the past couple of weeks, but and the concern about energy bills. This was Keir Starmer unveiling plans for Great British Energy.
The largest onshore wind farm in Wales. Who owns it? Sweden. Energy bills in Swansea are paying for schools and hospitals in Stockholm. The Chinese Communist Party has a stake in our nuclear industry. And 5 million people in Britain pay their bills to an energy company owned by France. So we will set up Great British Energy within the first year of a Labour government. A new company that takes advantage of the opportunities in clean British power. And because it is right for jobs, because it is right for growth, because it is right for energy independence from tyrants like Putin, then yes, conference, Great British Energy will be publicly owned. British power to the British people.
Now, I thought what was really clever about this, Patrick, is that, again, it manages to be patriotic and British. British power produced here, not, you know, not foreigners coming over here and taking our electricity, while also being green. So it's sort of bridging that thing, which actually we talked a lot about when we were in Liverpool and talked to people in the Labour Party, this tension between, are we going for sort of wrap yourself in the flag voters or sort of soft left voters who might drift off to the Greens, and somehow they've managed to fashion a policy which does both.
Yes, exactly. And this is what allies of Ed Miliband very aggressively pushed back when you, I and Henry Zetman wrote in the Times early in the week about people criticising Ed Miliband as one of the authors of this this conference's green strategy, and saying this is, you know, this is classic Ed trying to remake Keir as an eco-warrior. You know, similar concerns about Ed Miliband are held by lots of people in and around the shadow cabinet. And allies of Ed Miliband said, well, hang on, no, this isn't a, you know, turning Labour into the political wing of Greenpeace. This is all about trying to pitch the green agenda as a way of answering those big questions about energy independence, about you know, protecting Britain from Putin and other bad actors on the international stage. And as you say, branding it as Great British Energy does do that. It's quite an interesting package. And also, it's much harder to pillory, I think, for the right to pillory it as a as an act of sort of, you know, neo-Corbynism, because as well as the branding, the sum of money involved is quite small, and it's not talking about nationalising the entire energy industry, but it is, you know, a new state-owned enterprise that can please people on the left, and even Momentum gave it a cautious welcome. So it's one of those rare policies from the Labour Party that seems to have pleased almost everybody.
And it's quite easy to understand, rather than some of the sort of British industrial strategy stuff, which is probably very important, but isn't exactly what people are talking down the dog and duck. All right, Patrick, let's turn our attention now to perhaps what's been one of the biggest problems that Keir Starmer's had recently, for much of his leadership, and that's Brexit. Let's take a listen to what he had to say about that.
Conference, the policy of my Labour government will always be to make Brexit work. It's no secret I voted Remain, as the Prime Minister did. But what I heard around the country was people who thought we'd got our priorities wrong, who wanted democratic control over their lives, but who also wanted opportunities for the next generation, communities they felt proud of, public services they could rely on. I didn't hear that Brexit was about slashing workers' rights. I didn't hear people wanting to lower standards on food, animal welfare and the environment. I didn't hear them wanting to end redistribution. So I want to speak directly to the people who left Labour on this issue. Whether you voted Leave or Remain, you've been let down. And with Liz Truss, the Tories are changing the meaning of Brexit before your eyes. I will make work pay for people who create this country's wealth. I will make sure we buy, make and sell more in Britain. I will revitalise public services and control immigration using a points-based system. I will spread power and opportunity to all our communities. And I will never be shy to use the power of government to help working people succeed. Labour will make Brexit work.
Labour will make Brexit work. Again, Patrick, turning this into a sort of patriotic appeal to making Britain better again, using the benefits of Brexit almost, even despite the fact that probably he deep down and most of the people around him still think that the costs of Brexit outweigh any benefits.
Yeah, exactly. And look, they're trying to present Brexit as settled and trying to present themselves at peace with Brexit. Whether that works in the long term, whether they can do that in the long term is another question. Danny Finkelstein writes very well about this.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
In today's paper. But look, the platform Labour wants to run in the next election is one. Senior advisor Keir Starmer put it to me last week, is nothing in this country works anymore, and it's the fault of the Conservative government. And as such, that strapline, make Brexit work, will, one, is a critique of the Tories on their own terms, but two, may well give Labour a bit of cover, as Keir Starmer set out in his Brexit speech earlier this year, to align more closely with the EU on several issues that is nowhere near full fat single market and customs union membership, but will bring down some of the bigger barriers to trade, maybe help solve the Northern Ireland protocol issue. And if they're framing that as, look, Brexit doesn't work, you voted for Brexit, the Tories let you down, we're not going to reverse Brexit, but we're going to make some technical changes to make it work, it may well pay dividends.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting that sort of make Brexit work, that could become everything. Make hospitals work, make schools work, make the trains work, make the economy work. There's a sort of a thread of something there that they might be able to pull on. Let's talk about Scotland now, because I mean, one of the things chatting to people in Liverpool, they were thinking that actually the sort of the Conservatives boils over in a way that it hasn't really for a long time, get the Tories out suddenly becomes quite a strong argument in lots of places where Labour has struggled, including in Scotland. And Keir Starmer went much further than I think we've heard him before on the question of Scotland and the SNP.
Scotland needs a Labour government that can deliver change, but it also needs the power and resources to shape its own future, whoever is in power in Westminster. And the SNP are not interested in this. For them, Scotland's success in the UK is met with gritted teeth, seen as a roadblock to independence, and so they stand in the way. We can't work with them. We won't work with them. No deal under any circumstances.
No deal under any circumstances. I mean, to some extent, he has to say that. But it was interesting, he went quite so hard on saying it, Patrick.
Yes, but I mean, that's the only political option Labour have, in that, given that the Tories were briefing a while ago, months ago, that they were going to run a revival of the 2015 Coalition of Chaos campaign that proved so effective against Ed Miliband and less effective against Jeremy Corbyn. So they've got to nip that in the bud from the off. And you also saw this play out to a lesser extent with a big debate the party had of a proportional representation, which passed on the conference floor. But people around Keir Starmer are very clear it's not going to go in their manifesto. They're not going to commit to proportional representation. And that is partly because of two things. One, the poll suggests they can win on first past the post. And, you know, turkeys don't vote for Christmas, having just won on first past the post, which can give you a big majority if you win on an outside swing. But the second is, you know, you speak to Labour ministers and they say, some of them will say, look, you can't put a fag paper between me and the Liberal Democrats. But others, like Laura Spirit, our Red Box reporter, spoke to Peter Kyle, the Northern Ireland secretary, for a video that's on the Times website yesterday. And he was making the point, look, people talk about a progressive alliance and making deals with the Liberal Democrats, the Greens, and even the SNP, when actually these parties often don't have that much in common. He was saying the Greens are a nationalist party in Scotland. So all of these sort of constitutional questions are now colliding. And I think Keir Starmer's people have found the answer, which has proven so elusive to others, which is Labour is now in a position to beat the Tories. So you want a Labour government, vote for a Labour government.
Just finally, it was interesting, and in fact, Keir Starmer was saying a similar thing this morning when he was on the rounds. He was on Times Radio Breakfast talking about how he was now closer to Tony Blair than Jeremy Corbyn. This is his sort of peroration, including quoting Blair himself.
Conference on climate change, growth, aspiration, levelling up, Brexit, economic responsibility. We are the party of the centre ground. Once again, the political wing of the British people. And we can achieve great things.
The political wing of the British people, of course, is the quote that Tony Blair said, or possibly didn't say, in 1996. It's interesting that he's now got such a confident grip on the party that he can wrap himself in the flag of Tony Blair as well as the flag of the Union Jack, and that not cause a massive row, Patrick.
Yeah, exactly. And let me return briefly to what I was talking to before about this conference being a triumph of quite ruthless organisation. You know, people used to use words like Stalinist when describing how Jeremy Corbyn's allies were running the party. When you speak to the few Corbynites who still bother to turn up to this, they say, well, look, ultimately, the problem was we couldn't run a Welsh stall. We weren't anywhere near ruthless enough. And Keir Starmer and his allies are behaving in the way we did, basically purging the party very effectively of the hard left. And, you know, it's a sort of, by the standards of the past 5 years, quite brave politically to you know, big up Tony Blair at Labour conference. But he's only able to do that because his team have basically made the party such a hostile environment for the sort of people who would dislike it.
Just finally, Patrick, minutes after the speech finished, we got the news about Rupa Huck being suspended by the Labour Party for her comments. Well, Keir Starmer's racist comments about the Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng. What's the latest on that?
Well, it's very interesting, isn't it, that there was a racism row on the final day of Labour conference and it still hasn't overshadowed his speech. How far the party has come since the days of Jeremy Corbyn and anti-Semitism. It's the first thing Jeremy Corbyn was actually told by his team when he came off the stage that the Chief Whip had decided to suspend Rupert Hook. And I think a source told me last night that Keir's response was, well, you know, that's the decision, let's do it swiftly. There was no sort of Corbynite-style prevarication. Well, the latest is that Keir Starmer has roundly condemned Rupa Hook. He said her comments were racist on stations, including Times Radio this morning. And despite her having apologised directly to Kwasi Kwarteng, she's not getting the whip back anytime soon. And, you know, there's a question mark of whether she stands as a Labour candidate in the next election, according to some senior Labour people. So we won't be seeing her with the Labour whip, or indeed on Have I Got News For You next week, as she was slated to be anytime soon, I don't think.
Just finally then, Patrick, how would you, as it all starts packing up around you, just rate the conference out of 10 for Keir Starmer?
For Keir Starmer, I'd give it a solid 8. The internal tensions in his team haven't gone away, but I'd say he is basically silenced most of his internal critics. The shadow cabinet have, for once, precious little to moan about. As a spectacle for journalists, I'd give it as I said to a very senior Labour aide the other day, it's been very flat, and they basically purred. They smiled. They said it was there haven't been any gratuitous rows that you were. I don't know whether you meant you personally, you or me, Matt, or feelings as a whole. I think it was a mixture of three. No gratuitous rows that you love writing about so much. I think For us, it's been pretty boring, but for Keir Starmer, it's achieved everything he wanted.
And, right, Patrick, I'll let you get off now because I know you want to go and have a Barocco and a Red Bull and a lie down and have a nap on the train.
Look, I'm wide awake. I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You should have seen Henry Zeppelin as he was walking out the golf centre. That's all I'll say.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
The secret to visibly firmer, summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dull, dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Rich yet never greasy, Andaria Algae Body Oil is formulated with sustainably sourced seaweed to help replenish the skin's moisture barrier and 7 nourishing active botanical oils for results you can see and feel all over. The best part? Its signature scent. A blend of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. This all-natural scent is unforgettable. Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Cross Wires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.